When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Singer-songwriter Durango McMurphy has some incredibly interesting stories as a traveling troubadour. He has gone from New York to Colorado and is now settled in the Midwest, where he creates his own brand of Americana and country blues. His new song, The Ghost of James Dean, Line Dancing for Rebels, is out now. Durango is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles as we talk about his interesting career. Durango, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Greg, thanks. How are you today?
I am well. How about yourself?
I'm good. It's a little rainy here where I am in Wisconsin, but yeah, considering the world situation, I'm doing fine, you know.
There you go. Well, I mean, that's really all we can try to do, right, is to do fine. So tell me a little bit about your background with music. You grew up in New York, is that right?
Well, I was born right outside of New York City in Jersey. My dad used to be a musician. He was a trumpet player.
Okay.
He played around the New York area. And my uncle was Harold Arlen, who wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Mm. Wow, cool.
So I had like a musical family, but then we moved to Florida. So I traveled up and down the coast with my folks, you know, and I actually stopped and picked cotton a couple times up in South Carolina. And, I grew up in Florida. So I got a sense of the southern thing. I went to college in Tallahassee, and I spent a lot of time playing in some bands around, a lot of soul bands, because I was playing trumpet at the time. So I'd play Sam and Dave and, you know, things like that. Okay. All the soul music that I really love. I love that stuff. And I was in the horn section. But then I realized what Paul McCartney realized about when he was 10, I didn't realize it till I was like 20, that you can't sing really with a trumpet in your mouth. So I said, oh yeah, well, hey, it is a concept, you know?
Yeah.
And, people, they told me I could sing a little bit. So I thought, well, okay. So I picked up a little guitar and I started, playing here and there. And then I went out to Colorado, where I ended up at Naropa Institute, the Kerouac School. And hung out with the Beat Poets and all those guys, and that's another podcast right there. The stories about Allen Ginsberg and Gregory Corso and Ferland Getty and all the Ken Kesey. Uh-huh. Ken Kesey invited me once out to the farm to play with he was doing something with the Grateful Dead.
Wow!
But I got sidetracked and I ended up in San Francisco. And I never made it out there. And I hitchhiked up to Oregon to make some money picking apples. And my girlfriend fell off a ladder.
Oh, my.
And so I had to get her back to Texas.
Wow.
next thing I know, I don't know what happened to the Grateful Dead. I don't know what happened, man. And I'm still kind of in that Rolling Thunder kind of a vibe. We're thinking, it's an interesting thing. There's a philosopher who influenced Jerry Garcia called Terence McKenna. He was, I think he's passed away now, but he had this concept of like the opposite of a black hole. Something he said, there's something in nature, a black hole pulls us back, But he postulated that there's this force, you know, it's like Yoda, trust in the force. Mm-hmm. There's this force that kind of pulls us forward. And I kind of found that really interesting. So I've been always trying to follow that guidance, that force.
Yeah.
And because there's so many variables in life and in the universe, you can't do it analytically. You just can't.
Yeah.
So there's that Yoda-like trust the force. So I just keep following it, you know?
Yeah.
And then after wandering around like Jack Kerouac for a few years, I ended up back in New York again. And that's another long story. I lived in Brooklyn. I hung out with all the artists. I'm actually in a painting by Red Grooms called The Cedar Tavern, which is hanging in a museum in New York somewhere.
Wow.
And he kept me as, he used me and my friend Daniel Berlin, the artist, as models for the painting.
Huh.
And he kept my face as the bartender. So I'm actually the bartender in this painting hanging at the Metropolitan Museum. So that's sort of, in 25 words or less, that's kind of my musical background. And all this time I've been, you know, playing in different bands. I played in soul bands. I played in rock and roll bands. But as I got a little older, I gravitated more toward folk, and not folk country, Americana.
Sure.
You know, I view myself an American. I'm an American.
Mm-hmm.
And like, all the traditions of American music, blues, Cajun jazz, rock and roll, all those things, I think are, as an amalgam, make up my idea of what Americana is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it attracted me as a genre because although like, you know, like a lot of people, well, I don't know this genre, that genre, you can't define it, blah, blah, blah. I think if I'm going to put myself into a bag, it would be Americana.
Yeah.
Because I really love the country and I love the music. So,
well, it's a nice big umbrella that you can put a lot of things under that doesn't seem to fit in the mainstream definitions. And so I think a lot of people have learned to enjoy it that way because it does seem to land music in a place that's, for lack of a better word, it's all of the lost souls that don't fit anywhere else almost always fit in the Americana umbrella somewhere. So,
yeah, because America, it's like that vast, for me, I started reading Woody Guthrie at some point.
Uh-huh.
And I always liked Woody's music.
Yeah.
But when I read his books, Bound for Glory, Born to Win,
yeah,
I always felt that like Guthrie was probably a better writer, a novelist, a storyteller than he was actually a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and of course Dylan was influenced by Guthrie, and I started listening to Dylan back in the day. And I thought when I first heard like millions of other people, the first time I heard like a Rolling Stone,
yeah,
you know, I went like, whoa, what is this about? You know, you know, cause everybody at the time was listening to, I don't know what they were listening to, but that was a game changer for me.
Yeah.
And then I started reading Woody and, got into the folk thing. I listened to Joan Baez. I have an interesting Joan Baez story. I met her one time. I was, when I first showed up in Boulder at Naropa, I was in Ginsberg's first poetry class. And so there's about 12 of us in a basement of this old school that they rented. Anyway, so this was around the time the Rolling Thunder Review came around.
Hmm.
So Alan said, oh, we're in the Rolling Thunder Review. You ought to come. I thought, well, you know, I don't know. I can't afford it. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I had a friend named Cindy who got me a couple tickets to go see the Rolling Thunder Review with Dylan and Joan Baez. And I think Roger McGuinn was on the band at that time. I'm not sure who. Anyway, so I drive up to Fort Collins, Colorado, which is where the concert was.
Hmm.
But I got there late because I'd sort of been partying. That was in my younger days. I was, you know, kind of partying a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I partied a little too hard. So I got there late and the parking lot was completely filled.
Wow.
But everybody was already in the stadium, but the concert hadn't started yet. So having no idea where to go, I didn't know what to do. I just walked in the first gate I saw.
Yeah.
And it turns in, I walked back straight through And I ended up backstage.
Oh,
and so here I am backstage at the Rolling Thunder Review concert, which I think they made a movie of a couple of years ago or something. Anyway, so I look up at the stage and there's Alan, who I knew from Boulder. He said, "Oh, what are you doing here?" And I said, "I don't know. What is anybody doing anywhere?" You know. And then I wander around. I'm just sitting back there. And I sit down on a case, you know, some kind of drum case, you know, the way they put drums in a, like a suitcase kind of thing.
Right, right.
And so I'm sitting in the suitcase. I literally did not know where to go. I didn't know how to get out to the stadium because I was backstage, right? And I'm just sitting there. And all of a sudden, this woman comes down, sits down, says, "Oh, how are you? Yeah, fine. That's a nice day. Yeah, good turnout. Well, yeah, blah." And we're talking. I say, "Well, okay, nice to see you. Fine, okay, bye. You know. And at this point, security notices that there's something amiss here. Who's this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they were very nice, but these huge security guys come and say, "You got to go." "Oh yeah, sure." And that's all I was trying to do in the first place,
right,
to go
right.
out to hear the concert. But anyway, so they come out, and as I go out there, I'm sitting there, I'm right near the front because I was backstage, so I came to the front of the concert, and here comes this woman out to open the show, and it's Joan Baez, and it turns out that this woman I was talking to sitting on the drum case.
Oh wow!
Right?
Yeah.
So I was talking to Joan, but I didn't know who she was.
Wow!
You know? I just thought, oh, that's interesting.
That's crazy.
So I heard Joan Baez. So musically, but all these things are influences in what I try to do. I just want to make people happy. I want to entertain people. I want them to enjoy the music. Plus, I write love songs and things like that, like everybody else does. But I also want to try to make it meaningful, especially in the current political climate with the war in Ukraine,
right?
All that going on. And the song that I'm released recently, The Ghost of James Dean, Lion Dancing for Rebels, was inspired by that.
We're going to take a quick break from the interview. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
Is this a single that's part of an upcoming album or an album that's already out?
It's a single, part of an upcoming album in my head.
Okay.
I have like two songs that were just released on a compilation from Bongo Boy Records called Homestead Volume 6.
Okay.
And the two songs are Dumpster Paradise and Downtown Rodeo.
Okay.
And I've got those two and this new one, Ghost of James Dean, that I'm thinking about maybe putting a couple songs that I did previously and maybe do one or two. I got a sort of a I was in Asheville, North Carolina for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got this one song called Asheville in Spring. So I'm thinking about doing a CD or an album or something. But right now, my main concern was The Ghost of James Dean, because the Ukraine war is really not good.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother, it turns out, in around the 1920s sometime, was actually from Russia via Ukraine. She came to Ellis Island, and that's how I ended up being born in New York, because my grandmother came from Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was raised, the family was pretty much Russian-Ukrainian.
Mm.
My grandmother would go to like the Russian club on Saturday to dance or something, play bingo, or she'd go to the Ukrainian club to dance or something. Then she'd go to the Russian Orthodox Church on Sunday.
Mm.
So I kind of got a hit of both sides of this equation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so personally, I've been sort of an anti-war kind of activist back in the day.
Uh-huh.
But I try to be objective. I try to be like an umpire.
Sure.
Like call a ball and a strike a strike.
Right.
And I can see arguments on both sides that are valid, and I can see arguments on both sides that are they're completely nuts.
Right.
You know? So I tried to write something that was would address the issue in a way that was positive.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I'm an American. And so the chorus of the song is about freedom, And it's about love, because I grew up during the with the Beatles and all that.
Yeah.
And it has three parts to the song. The first part, it deals with the fact that I think we're in danger of losing a lot of our constitutional rights just due to a mindset that I think is kind of questionable. The second section of the song is about paranoia. I think fear is really, if you think about Russia and NATO, Russia is really afraid that NATO is going to come and attack them, and NATO is really afraid that Russia is going to come and attack them. And I think this, there was a book called Dune by Frank Herbert, which I read a while ago, quite a while ago. And he had this line in it, fear is the mind killer. And that always stuck with me. And I thought, one of the main problems here is fear. That's driving all the anger and all. Everybody's afraid. They're afraid of COVID. They're afraid of this. They're afraid of that. And if we can cut through that fear, and have a little more confidence in what's going on in the world we live in the universe, I think things would be better, in my view. And then the third section of the song is about war. You know, it's just about the endless cycle of war that keeps plaguing humanity, and trying to cut through it by I'm trying to do what I can do to make it better.
Is the song out in video form, or where can people?
No, I didn't do a video. I have a few of my older rock and roll videos on YouTube, but I'm not really promoting them because I'm not doing that kind of music anymore. I have a few things on YouTube. I'm also a videographer. I did the filming as well. But I don't have a video for this. I only had one station play it so far, WFUM in Nashville, hosted by Gina Bacon, gave it a spin. And I'm trying to get it out there to the radio world, but I don't have any record label. I'm just an indie guy. I'm just me, you know. So if any of your listeners happen to work for a record company, hey, I'm here, you know.
So is it available on the streaming services? I mean, where can people take a listen to it?
Well, I'm going to get it on Spotify soon. They should be able to do that within the next couple of weeks.
So it's not at your website yet then?
Well, I didn't even get it on the website because I'm sort of like a one-man band here at the moment. I'm doing the website. I'm writing the songs. I'm trying to promote the song, you know. But I will get it on the website soon, and it should be on Spotify soon. And hopefully, you know, get a little momentum for it.
Sure, yeah.
So it was. I think it's a pretty good tune. I mean, they liked it at WFUM anyway.
Are you out playing as a solo musician or with a band right now? Do you have a current?
Yeah. Well, I had a band, but our drummer got killed in a car wreck.
Oh man.
He was in Michigan, and I had a band called the Dream Flags, but our drummer burned Daumet, a German. Euro drummer. He was at a stop sign in a Jeep, and he got rear-ended, and it just exploded. So that kind of just blew us out, and we just that was the end of the band. So I decided I'm just going to just I'm playing. I got a few gigs in Wisconsin. I played a little really nice place. It's the barbecue ice cream combination place called Z's. I played there. There's a group called Pints and Politics that does they do political events where they have, it's like the idea of have a few beers and talk about politics.
Sure, yeah.
And so I'm playing for them quite often. And I played around. Years ago, I played the Cleveland Public Theater, and I played Denver at the Mercury Cafe, and, you know, did the whole thing. But at the moment, I'm just trying to get some momentum going again.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for anything that, you know, and it resembles help. You know, I mean, when I used to play trumpet, I played this guy Shockley for a while, Tom Shockley band, and he was kind of like If you like this kind of music, he was really good. He was kind of like a Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck kind of guy.
Okay.
And if you like, a lot of people don't like it, but a lot of people do. And if you like it, he was really good.
Yeah.
And I played in the horn section, and we traveled around for a while. And I played with him, but we had an agent. We had a booking agent.
Sure. Yeah.
And it would seem, they seemed to have vanished into the netherworld. I mean, I can't find one.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, so I don't know, man. It's a rough call.
Wow.
But we travel. We opened for a lot of, I met a lot of people. We opened for the Drifter, a lot of old bands that were still, I don't want to say living on their laurels, but bands like the old 50s band, like Jerry Lee Lewis, the Drifters, the Coasters, Paul Revere and the Raiders, people like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
But that's before I took my trumpet and because it was kind of a Vegas show band. I walked to the end of a pier in Florida one, threw it all in the ocean.
Oh,
I just couldn't take it. Oh, it was like, man. this whole kind of Las Vegas kind of thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it, man. Wow. I can't do this.
Wow.
Hence the Americana folk,
yeah.
The more organic, the more genuine, the more heart music.
Yeah.
And not that the trumpet came from the heart, if it did, but I was playing show band stuff every night, same thing over and over again, blah, 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 you know. So, so if people want to listen to it, I guess, look, you can go to the website. I got other stuff on the website. I'll put that up there. So I got a tune called Made for Love on the website that's pretty good. I've got one thing, but now this is totally not Americana. I call it Bob Dylan Goes to Bollywood. It's a folk song called Another Gandhi, which is like a folk. The only reason I mentioned Dylan, it's kind of like a folky song.
Mm-hmm.
If you just listen to the song itself, if you stripped it from all the production, it would just be a song.
Mm-hmm.
But I produced it like a Bollywood dance tune.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And it's called Another Gandhi. And I got quite a bit of play for that in Europe. And it's on the website. And the video on the website for Another Gandhi, it's me. It's me singing. It's my song. But it's a Bollywood kind of a club dance tune.
Mm.
Because I was trying to get some, I won an award for somebody. There's something called the Academia or something like that in L.A. I got some kind of, I don't know what I got for it. But anyway, I think it's a pretty good tune.
Yeah.
I was trying to get some sense of being from Miami. There's a lot of clubs there.
Yeah.
I mean, I've spent a lot in Florida. I spent a lot of time in Miami, South Beach, all that. I got a funny BG story too. This I'll tell you the BG story. We have time, right?
We got about 2 minutes. So go ahead.
Okay. Funny Bee Gees story. There was a guy named Dennis Britt with a band called the Beat Poets. And I was doing some poetry with Dennis's band, and they signed a thing for it with the Bee Gees, had an album. And he said, oh, man, come on into the studio. We're going to do this thing. Yeah, okay. And they said, well, when are we going to do the poetry? Oh, we'll do that later. We'll do it later, man. Okay, have some Jägermeister. Oh, yeah, okay. So I have some Jäger, right? So I guess it's about 8 o'clock. Now it's about 10 o'clock. Well, when are we going to? Well, have some more Jäger, man. Mm-hmm. So by the time we got to it, it was like 1 in the morning. And myself and the band were completely flopped. This was in the BG studio in South Beach.
Mm.
And and by the time we were just banging on instruments and screaming at the top of our voice. And I remember when we went back into the recording room, one of the BG's girlfriends, I don't know who she was, she looked at us and she said, that was the worst thing I've ever heard.
Oh, man.
And I thought, well, I made an impact on them.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
but back to a Gandhi, and then we'll finish up. I wrote it to try to get some sense of awareness of be a little less vacant into the club scene. Not to put people down. People do what they do, and they can do it. But the clubs tend to have this kind of vacant quality to it. So I wanted to write a song that I thought the lyric might impact people in a club setting.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's kind of the deal. So I don't know if we still got a minute. Thank you. And thank you, everybody. And I'm looking forward to the magazine. I know I've been talking a lot, but that's what you're supposed to do on a phone.
Yeah, right. For sure. No, this has been great. Tell us the website so that the listeners can find you.
It's https.com/. DurangoMcMurphy.com, DurangoMcMurphy, DurangoMcMurphy.com. And it's https://DurangoMcMurphy.com.
Great. Good. No, hey, the stories are awesome. I love the history with the stories, and you've had plenty of time to spend time in and around the music and collect those, and I'm sure that they have there's plenty of influence there in your songwriting. So I wish you well with the Ghost of James Dean and getting that into circulation. And yeah,
it's one of those things, man. It's such a volatile time. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But anyway, so thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
You can hear the new single at DurangoMcMurphy.bandcamp.com.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.